from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. Welcome back to the Better Lawns and Gardens, the second hour. We're going to hear from John Denver first. And the dirty word of the day is bract, B-R-A-C-T. And this is part of the plant, which is a modified leaf. It is not the flower, but it is a modified leaf that is colorful. So in botany, a bract is a specialized leaf, especially associated with a reproductive structure like a flower. So you will see bracts coming out of the plant, and they look very colorful, but that is not the flower. The flower is on the inside. So what plants have bracts? Well, you can get anthuriums. Then bromeliads have the beautiful colored bracts that come out, and then you'll see the small flowers, usually weeping, that the blue and white flowers out of the bromeliads. Poinsettias, it is the red leaves of the poinsettia that are bracts, it's not the flower. Dogwoods and Jack in the Pulpit, skunk cabbage, and stinking passion flower. Love in the Mist and Bougainvillea. Those beautiful, colorful fuchsia and orange and pink and even white bougainvilleas. The color is the bracts, and inside the bracts are white flowers. All bougainvilleas have white flowers. Hibiscus and salvia, hydrangeas and trilliums, shrimp plants. The yellow shrimp plant, you see the yellow bracts coming up, and then the white flowers spill out of the top. Curcumas like the Siam tulip and turmeric. Bee balm, and then the white star sedge, which is one of my, again, another favorite Florida native plant. White star sedge, it looks like a shooting star or a rocket going up into outer space. It's just a wonderful plant. So don't know how to tell whether your plant, that part of the plant is a bract? Look for these clues. It's located above the leaves, but below the flowers. It's usually green, but it could be other colors. It can be small and leaf-like or large and showy. And there is even a plant with the bracts that bats detect acoustic signals from the bracts that are dish-shaped, such as those of the colorful Cuban native, Margravia evenia. And that plant, the dish-shaped bracts, allow the bats to know where the pollen is so they can get the nectar and pollinate that vine. So that's really cool. It's very interesting, but I've had a lot of questions about bougainvilleas and other plants, poinsettias this time of the year, that the bracts are an important part of the plant. So that's the dirty word of the day. So I'm very excited about that. And you can use it in conversation.
Yes.
You know, so you can say, look at those lovely bracts and that fuchsia color. And you can say, that's a leaf, and explain to them what it is. So I did not get to Jerry's question on the amount or the type of blackberries that are native that need low chilling hours. Let me go to my list here. And it's a very good question. So, let's see. Blackberries. I have it right here.
Sorry. Jerry from Citrus County had called in on the last hour and had a question about it.
Yes.
So we're just playing catch up with the blackberries.
It's the ones that are the, let's see, here we go. The Indian names, like the Navajo and the Arapaho and also Kiowa. And so if it's got a Indian name to the blackberry, they usually are the low chill hours. And they will do fine throughout Florida, just doing lovely throughout Florida. So Kiowa and then Navajo, Arapaho, and those are the low chilling hours. And that's low chilling hours is about 200 hours. And they will do even well up further north too as well. So where they can get 300 hours at the North Florida border area. And so they will do well. So, Jerry, thank you so much for the great question, and enjoy your blackberries. I love that. So we're going to be back with word of mouth. If you missed the first hour, you can go to our podcast, which is on iHeartRadio and Better Lawns and Gardens. Better Lawns and Gardens, you can go to betterlawns.com. or iHeartRadio. Just look up Better Lawns and Gardens or Teresa Watkins and you'll find it. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
Splish, splash, I'm taking up.
Everything okay in here?
Oh, yeah, sure is.
You're wearing a life jacket.
Sure am.
In the tub?
Practicing for when we head to the lake. I read about wearing one at wearitflorida.com.
And wearitflorida.com told you to wear it in the tub?
Nope, that was my idea. You know, Florida is the leader in boating fatalities, so a life jacket can save lives.
As you were.
Splish, splash, I was taking a
Learn more at wearitflorida.com.
Life can be full of risks. One thing you shouldn't take a risk with ever is your family's health insurance. If you're self-employed or you now need affordable health insurance, you need to make this free call right now and see how the Health Insurance Helpline can help you get it.
800-398-0651. 800-398-0651. 800-398-0651. That's 800-398-0651.
Attention Florida drivers! October is National Pedestrian Safety Month, and we want to remind you that staying safe is a shared responsibility between you and pedestrians. Last year in Florida, there were over 10,000 pedestrian-related crashes. As a driver, be extra cautious and look out for pedestrians at all times. Slow down and yield to pedestrians in crosswalks. Failure to yield can result in a fine and 3 points on your license. Remember, safety starts with you. This message is brought to you by the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles.
If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it'll take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 10 million people. Without destroying your credit, they can reduce your interest rates, lower your total payments up to 30 to 50% to get you out of debt fast. For a free consultation, call Consolidated Credit now. The program works. Call 1-800-206-6755. 1-800-206-6755. 1-800-206-6755.
Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and we have joining us right now Austin Tolman. He is co-owner of Word of Mouth Tree Services. They are an excellent certified arbor company, and he has just great knowledge. I wanted him to come on because I've been getting lots of emails, people sending photographs saying, is my tree going to survive, and what's going on with my trees after the storm? The tree is still standing, but it doesn't look good. So, good morning, Austin. How are you this morning?
Teresa, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. So, how did you and Brooke and Lainey do during the storms?
We did perfectly fine. You know, we didn't have any damage. You know, just a lot of mess, kind of like everybody else. But we did very well. So,
oh, good.
You know, compared to a lot of the mess that we have seen around Central Florida, for sure, we were very fortunate.
Oh, wonderful! Sure. That's good to hear. And so, I know you're working practically 7 days a week right now, trying to get everybody all taken care of. That was two extremely powerful storms, Helene and Milton. And the first time I've been actually scared, you know, Austin. So I was really concerned about it. I'm so glad a lot of people evacuated. But the damage in trees and the tree loss, what are going to be the estimates? Do you have any idea of how many trees we lost in Florida or are going to lose?
Oh, shoot, Teresa. I mean, it was definitely, you know, two of the more powerful storms we've had in a long time, that's for sure. And you know, a lot of twisters and tornadoes spun off of that Milton as well. So we did see a lot of microbursts here and there. And, you know, as far as an estimate, I mean, me alone, Teresa, we've probably seen, I would say 50 to 60 trees down. And that's in a week's period of time. And, you know, it's what I call residual hurricane damage, mm-hmm. is what we haven't seen yet. So, say they may have suffered a fracture crack that you know we haven't seen or we haven't noticed yet, and in the coming weeks, no wind, no rain, you know, and you may have a limb failure or whole tree failure. You know, those are things that we really need to look for now. So as far as an estimate, I mean, there was definitely hundreds, Teresa, I would say, at the very least.
Yeah, no, I understand. And that's in every area there would be that many. So I understand that. So what are the immediate concerns? You mentioned some, like the cracks were for trees, but what should homeowners look for, and can they look for them, or do they need to have a certified arborist?
Sure. So I always recommend having a certified arborist come out and do an assessment of the property, especially after a storm like that. And if you do have bigger mature trees, even immature trees for that matter. But, some of the biggest things that homeowners can look for is signs of heaving and or uprooting. And an easy way to tell, a lot of times trees may have a natural lean, but if you go up around the base of that tree and you start to walk around it and you start to feel any kind of sponge feel, or a soft feel to the soil around the tree, that is a sign of uprooting, or that root system may have been compromised during the storm. And you want to look for other things, like look up in the canopy. Now that it has been about a week since the hurricane, you're going to start seeing some of those limbs that were cracked or broken, they're going to start to brown up. So those are things you really want to look for in those trees, because there are hangers or widow makers up in there that you definitely want to be careful when you're walking underneath. So those are two main things I can tell you that are very easy to spot. And then, of course, as a certified arborist, there are some other things that we can look for as well.
Okay. And so you mentioned the upheaving and the tilting trees and the uprooted trees. Can they be stood up, or after a certain size, do you have to take them down?
Yeah. So there's a lot of variables to that. I mean, the biggest one I would say is it all depends on the maturity of the tree. So a lot of your more mature trees, they're not going to do quite as well when they're so big, they can be, and their root plate is so established, it's pretty tough to correct that. It also depends on how badly that root system was affected. Did you have did the roots snap? Did they just heave or uproot? Things like that. A lot of your smaller immature trees I have seen lately that we have helped and assist to stand back up, they do okay. It's a time thing. Once you get them back up and you get them situated, you definitely are going to have to stake it for a good period of time. If not, the remainder of that tree's life, just because they are more prone to uprooting after it already has been uprooted.
Right.
And then it's all a time thing. You want to keep an eye on that canopy, make sure you don't have any tip dieback, things like that, in the near future.
So we have a lot of tree cutters out there that are not certified arborists, but we also have a lot of homeowners that are, looking at their trees and thinking that they need to cut them themselves. So should the tree branches be sawed off in a particular way so that it's healthy? What would you tell them to do?
Oh, definitely. Especially when you're dealing with trees that, suffered tears or rips, in terms of, where the unions connect on the tree. It's definitely something you got to be careful with, because the cuts that you are making are going to determine the health of that particular limb in the future. So you really want to be careful about how you're making those cuts, how close you're coming into the tree, because you do want to leave that branch bark collar, rather than going flush to the tree. But, and the other thing to look for too, Teresa, is, a lot of times there's a lot of pressure points. So, for example, when people might be trying to get the widow makers out of the tree, you got to understand there's a lot of pressure points on that, and you got to be very careful about the cuts you make, because there's a lot of tension there. So that's probably the biggest thing I would stress in terms of safety.
Right, and I appreciate that. Each time you say widow maker, I get a chill. And so it's best to have a certified arborist look at your trees and do the work. And so, so painting these cuts, I've had some questions in the past whether the cuts should be painted. And we used to do that a lot in Florida, but I don't see it very much anymore.
Yeah, I really, to be honest with you, Teresa, I really don't suggest. I've never got into the pruning paints or, as far as cavities go, I've never got into, foam fillers or tar or concrete, anything like that, just because I never suggest anything artificial to the tree. It's not natural, and a lot of times it can, it can lead to problems in the future. And it doesn't allow the tree to grow naturally, in my opinion.
Okay, good. That's good to know. So listeners are sending in photos of their trees to me, and here's this beautiful oak tree, which looks completely healthy, except all the leaves on the whole tree are brown. Now, so what's going on there, and could they still die?
Well, so again, so that goes back to a time thing. You know, I'm never one to rush to judgment, and you know, I'm always going to give a tree a shot. I mean, of course, we did have a ton of wind damage from these storms. I mean, we're talking about 90 plus mile an hour winds, and more in some cases, depending on the area you were in Central Florida. You know, but a lot of that should come back. And again, it all depends on the tree, and it's all circumstantial. But it's all a time thing. You got to give it a little bit of time. Give it a couple months to a year. See how the new foliage starts pushing out of these trees. If it does, so on and so forth. But I can really say on that is you definitely want to give it some time for sure.
So let's talk about palm trees. And so palms, we saw a lot of damage with that. We saw some snapped, but a lot of the fronds are dying. And so your same recommendation there, are the palm trees going to survive?
So palm trees, the thing about palm trees is, you're going to get wind damage. You're going to get snapped fronds. You're going to get fronds that may have, again, maybe had a stress fracture on that particular frond, and it is going to start to die off possibly. The only fronds at this point, because they did just go under some pretty traumatic winds, the only thing I would recommend pruning on those palms would be absolutely dead fronds, okay? Even the fronds that may start yellowing up, I would leave those because they are still pulling potassium. The important thing on the palms is the central frond, once that's damaged, the tree is pretty much on its way out at that point. Mm-hmm. But I would say right now, I mean, if you do have browning fronds on your palm, you want to wait until they're completely brown. If they still have some green, I would leave them alone because you definitely don't want to cut into any live tissue at this point again because they just went under some pretty traumatic stress.
Okay, and so that's really important because, here in Florida, and I see even cities and commercial properties doing this where they hurricane prune cut the palms, and they kind of leave it like, Pebble's little hair, ribbon up on top of their head. It just really, they only leave like three or four branches at the top. Is that good for palm trees?
It is not. So, contrary to popular belief, which hurricane pruning in this, I could go in a rabbit hole of this, Teresa, but, with palms particularly, hurricane pruning has always been suggested because obviously if you take more fronds off, it's less sail or less for the wind to grab in terms of, pulling the palm over or having a whole tree failure. Well, what they've actually found, and they've done studies on the coast where you do get the most wind, and obviously you have a fair amount of palms, is when you hurricane prune a palm tree, what they're running into a lot of times is that you're exposing that central frond even more. And again, like I said, going back to it, when that central frond gets damaged or snaps, that's the heart of the palm, essentially. So actually keeping your frond or your palms full actually does
protects
more
it.
Correct. It protects it rather than relieving stress in terms of wind failure and sail. So I would always suggest leaving your palms full. The only things I would really prune on a palm tree would be your dead fronds.
Right.
And that's
completely brown.
Safety.
Yeah. Completely
correct.
Brown. If it's got
safety.
Green on it.
Mm-hmm. Aesthetically, people are going to want their palms cleaned up, which I understand and I totally get. And at that point, we really only take the fronds that we have to, but I would definitely stay away from completely hurricane pruning.
There you go. Good recommendation. I like that. So there's a lot of good certified tree companies out there with certified arborists. Everyone's booked up, or you just got to be real patient. What do you suggest to homeowners who are worried about their trees?
This time of year, Teresa, whether it's, hurricane, of course, whether we had hurricanes come through or just in general, it is going to be the busiest time of the year for your certified arborist. The best thing I can say to homeowners is, of course, be patient. Find your local company, okay, your local certified arborist, okay, because you're going to have a lot of companies that are coming in and out of Florida right now because, of course, hurricane relief. But you want to deal with a local company because, here on, they're going to be who you're going to want to have questions based on what they might have done when this hurricane came through, what kind of pruning they did to that tree, and you may have questions maybe a year or two from now, and they're going to be able to assist you with that.
Great. Okay, we've got to wrap up. We've got a hard break here, Austin. I want to thank you for coming on. Give us your website and how they can contact word of mouth.
Absolutely, Teresa. So again, thanks for having me. Easiest way to get a hold of us is going to be at wordofmouthtreeservice.com.
There you go. Thank you so much, Austin. I appreciate you coming on, and you stay safe, and thank you for all you do to help clean up Florida. We're going to be back with more of Better Lawns and Gardens. If you have a gardening question, you can give us a call, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text 23680. Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. This is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. And welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and I'd like to thank Austin Tolman, who is part owner of his family-owned company. Him and Perry and Patty, all of them, it's just a great company, good service, and they know their stuff. And so he is, I appreciate him coming on this morning. So that's great. So I did go to, down to Palm Beach, West Palm Beach area this week, mm-hmm. and the bromeliad site. I sent you the pictures of those bromeliads.
They're gorgeous.
Oh my goodness. They look, I mean, it's incredible. So these are two bromeliads. If you want to go online and look at them, I'll post pictures too on our Better Lawns Facebook page, Better Lawns and Gardens Facebook page. But it's called Wild Rabbit and Tremendous Tiger. And if you'll look at those, they just send my heart a fluttering. So I loved meeting everyone down there, and it was just great. So if you are interested in bromeliads, find a bromeliad society in your area. There's lots of them in Florida. And it's a great way to get special types of bromeliad. They're very generous. They share with you, and you learn all about growing bromeliads, and so it's a lot of fun. So now Mark in Winter Garden had two questions. He sent me great photographs, and he said, what is this small weed plant that grows in my yard in the grass? Weed and feed kills it. And then also, secondly, they've been appearing on my rose bush in front of my house for about 2 months. So he sent me two different pictures. The first one, Mark, is called Chamber Bitter. And it's especially annoying and very aggressive weed. It does have thorns on it, so you got to be careful when you're pulling it out of the ground. But it also has little pods underneath the leaves, and each pod has 6 seeds in it. And so it's very aggressive, and it just gets into your yard. It's horrible. And so what you want to do is remove the weed, and you do right that you can put an herbicide on it for broadleaf weeds. It will kill it. Or you can just easily pull them up. Just be careful to do it at the bottom so you don't get the thorns. So it is called Chamber Bitter. The second one is a picture of a bagworm. And a bagworm is a moth that particularly likes junipers and all kinds of pines and cedar trees. And so they love that kind of northern woody look tree. And it is a bagworm cocoon. Looks like little sticks made out of. Go ahead and get rid of it. You can just pull it right off, squish it, and it's very easy to take care of. There's no reason to spray. But it is a moth, so if you have your lights on at night in your yard, you may see more of them. And we usually see them this time of the year because they're just putting cocoons, and it'll hatch in the springtime. So it gives you time to take care of it. So that's a great question. If you'd like to give us a call, 1-888-455-2967. Or you can text us at 23680. Let's go to, I don't see who it is. I'm sorry. Jim, good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good morning, Teresa. I had two questions, if I could.
Sure.
One about the palms. I have ponytail palms that are higher than the roof of my house. Mm-hmm. And if I have a section break off that's like 2 feet long and a 3-inch diameter, do I need to let it dry out? Can I put it directly into a pot? I mean, the fronds are green. And the other is, I have a black bat, or cat whiskers, has flowers all over it, but I also have a white bat, and it's doing nothing. It's side by side. So I didn't know if there's some trick or something I should be doing to get it to flower.
No, that's great. Okay, so on your ponytail, yes, go ahead and put it in a pot now. Just keep it moist. Doesn't need to be really real wet, but just keep it moist, and it'll do just fine. Okay, and so you can pull them off, you can cut them off, and put them in a pot. That's great. Now, your black bat and your white bat, that's really funny. Now, they're side by side, so they're in the same soil conditions. Are they planted in the ground or in a pot?
in pots.
Okay. Have you pulled the white one out of the pot to see what the root system is? How long have they been in the pots?
Oh, it's been in pots many months. No, I have not.
Okay. And do you fertilize them?
Rarely.
Rarely. Okay. So that may just be it. If you've had them for a few months and they've been in the pot, and so you got them from the nursery or the store, wherever you found them, and so they've used up their nutrition, they may not have enough nutrition to bloom, okay? They may not have enough energy to do that. So I would say, I wouldn't do it now. Where are you? In Ocoee? Okay, so.
Ocoee.
Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily fertilize them now, but in the springtime, I would go ahead and fertilize it. And
all right.
And you'll see it growing. So I just want to make sure you have enough soil in the pots, it's not root-bound, and that you're giving it the nutrition it needs on a regular basis.
And the ponytail palm that broke off, I don't have to let it dry off like a plumera. Mm-hmm. I can go ahead and put it now into the dirt.
Yeah, no. You don't even need to let the plumeria dry off. I mean, you can.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it'll just, just stick it in a pot and it'll grow.
Oh, I thought you had to let it dry for like 10 days.
Well, I mean, you can, but it doesn't need it. I mean, Mother Nature, doesn't need to do that. She just starts to grow. So I would just stick them in the pot. It's not something that if you don't let it dry out, that it's not going to get established and continue to grow. It will, and it'll be just fine.
Okay, well, I'll have that too. All right, well, thank you very much. Enjoy your show.
Thank you so much, Jim, for calling. I appreciate it. Let's go to Brenda in Polk City, and she's got pampas grass.
Hello.
Hello, Brenda. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. We enjoy your show.
Thank you.
We have some pampas grass in our cul-de-sac that we put in, and they've gotten real big around, and this is the first time we've ever grown them.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they're all laying over right now because of the storm.
Mm-hmm.
So how can I, and they're very brown, there is starting to become a little bit of green back into it.
Mm-hmm. How long have they been in the ground, Brenda?
Probably 6 months, maybe.
Okay. How tall and wide are they?
Well, they're probably yard and a half wide.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty tall.
Pretty tall. So they're taller than you. And is it in a good location?
No, not that tall.
Pardon me?
They're not that tall. They're not as tall as me, but they're probably, I'd say, 4 feet.
Okay, and so they've got a lot of brown leaves. Well, pampas grass, as it gets towards the wintertime, will kind of turn brown a little bit. And the leaves are razor sharp. So is it in a good location where you're not going to get, cut up a lot? That you can allow it to grow bigger?
They're in our cul-de-sac, but I don't really want them to get a whole lot bigger.
Oh, they get big. So if you don't want them to get bigger, you're going to have to divide it up and divide them up every few years and keep them small. Okay, because if you cut them, you're going to be cutting the blooms off, and not necessarily that they're blooming now, but in the springtime. So it's not something that you can keep back to like 2 to 3 feet and keep cutting it. Okay. Yeah, so they get big. They'll get to the flowers. They'll get up to be about 6 foot tall, if not taller. And they get wide, and they just keep expanding. So, So I just want them to be in a good location. Right. So if they're in an area where you can't let them get that big, I would think about moving them. And then when you move them, you can just trim back the dead fronds on it. But if you want to leave it there, you can just go ahead and in the springtime, okay, January or the end of January, first part of February, March, you can cut it down to the ground, and it will come back.
Really? Okay.
Okay. But now, but to keep it at 3 feet by 3 feet, I don't think you're going to do that with a pampas grass.
Okay.
Not unless it's a dwarf one.
We've never tried to grow this before.
Right. No, it gets pretty big. And then when it gets big, it cuts you up really. You have to wear gloves when you cut it. Thank you so much, Brenda. Appreciate you listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. If you have a call, you can give us a call, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me 23680. We're going to go to Anthony in Port St. Lucie. Good morning, Anthony. How are you?
Good morning. Hello.
And your question?
My question is, I'm in Port St. Lucie, considered South Florida.
Right.
And I'm looking to grow some food, possibly some vegetables and other food. I'm just wondering, we're going into the fall season, and what you could recommend that we plant.
Okay, so are you ready? And so you can go back and listen to the podcast and write them down, Anthony, if you want, but I'm going to give you the list for South Florida, and it's a little bit different than Central Florida and North Florida. So it is the same winter vegetables: beets, broccoli, cabbage, carrots, cauliflower, collards, but you could also grow corn and cucumbers and eggplants and endive, English and southern peas, escarole, kohlrabi, lettuce, lima beans, which are the pole beans or the bush beans, mustard, onions, parsley and peppers, potatoes and radishes, spinach and strawberries, summer squash and tomatoes, and then also turnips. So you have a lot you can grow right now. And if you would like to get my newsletter, each month in my newsletter, I give you what to do in your landscape. And I give you also all of the plants, vegetables, herbs, flowers, and ornamental grasses that you can grow in your area. So I send that out free every month. And you can just go onto my website, she-consulting.com. You can also find it by just Googling Teresa Watkins in your backyard, and it will come up. And you can just sign up. I do not spam or send anything. I don't sell my lister at all, so you're very private. But, Anthony, you can grow a lot.
Yes, sounds like it.
Okay.
So you said you mentioned this in your podcast earlier?
Well, not earlier today, but, yeah, you can go back. Now, after it uploads, you can go to betterlawns.com.
Yeah.
And you can listen to the podcast, or you can go on to iHeartRadio this afternoon in a couple of hours, and mm-hmm. it will be uploaded.
Yes.
And you can listen to all of the shows that we do. They're all up on anywhere where you listen to podcasts, you'll be able to find it.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome, Anthony. Thank you so much for the call. So we've got some really great questions here. So Eileen in Monticello, she had a great question. She said, good morning. Did you say you can plant petunias right now? And she thought they were spring only. But no, Eileen, you can plant petunias in October and November. Now, if you get a little bit of a frost, you can cover them with a frost blanket. But they will grow right through winter time. And if we're going to have a warm winter, they should be able to survive. But October, November is a good time to be planting petunias. And you'll see them in the nurseries right now. Now, if you put them in hanging baskets, then you can just take the baskets down and bring them inside till the freeze is over and then hang them back out again. But they can take a little bit of a cold, not freezing weather, but they can take, 40s and 50s, which is, happening right now. So Judy in Winter Springs, she has a small anthurium in her home that isn't producing the bright red leaves. Any suggestions? Well, I think, Judy, you should look at the root system. How long has it been in the pot? Anthuriums take a lot of water. Now, I don't mean it that it needs to be soaked every day, but they do need to have moist soil, just like you would find them in their native habitat in a good rainforest. And so they like to have moist soils, and that would be good potting mix if you have it, and then also fertilized on a regular basis. So you could give them some slow-release fertilizer, and that should help it bloom. Okay? I think that would be easier. But make sure you're watering it enough. And I would say at least once a week that it gets water. But it may be the soil. If it's been in the pot a long time, the soil may be used up and it doesn't have any nutrients left in it. And you might just want to change out the soil and give it some rejuvenation.
And Peterson's Nursery down there in Lakeland also has some right now, and they're getting more petunias in. So,
yay! Yes. Thank you, Howie. Great add-on. Get petunias at. I love the fuchsia-colored ones.
Oh, yeah.
And I love the variegated ones. So this is Lisa in Davenport. She says, we have a hedge of variegated Scheffleria umbrella plant. It's about 6 years old, 4 feet high, in full sun, and lines our paver pathway. It's always done very well, but now it seems to be dying. The leaves are turning black, and it happens to an entire branch at a time. We've lost over a quarter of it. What would cause this? I see no insects or scale and have just cut back the dead sections. I'm not sure if it's related, but the thrialis on the other side of the path is also struggling. Thank you, Lisa. That was a good description. One, it sounds like it's happened before the storm, but in the last 6 weeks to 2 months, we've gotten an awful lot of rain. And if you're irrigating on top of that, when plants turn black and not brown and crinkly, it's usually a sign of fungus and disease issues. So it may be a little bit of overwatering, or it could be just the amount of rainfall we had. Now, if it's turned black after Helene in the last few weeks, then it could also be wind damage and just the rainfall coming down in the last few weeks with the hurricane. So I would just see, one, you want to make sure that you have a rain shutoff device, which is mandatory by state law. It will turn your irrigation system off when you have had enough rainfall, and that's going to help you from overwatering. And so also, too, what time of the day do you water at? Any time after 5 a.m. in the morning is good. You don't want your shrubs to be wet longer than 5 hours. And so if you start watering it at 5 a.m., the sun's going to come up and it's going to dry off by 10 o'clock. If you're watering at, 7, 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night, 1, 2, 3, and even 4 o'clock in the morning, it's going to be wet longer than 5 hours, and it's going to be more susceptible to diseases then. So good question. Let me know. You can text back and or send me an email, teresa.watkins@live.com. Send me photographs, and I can look at it and be able better to help you.
Yeah, and the text line, we cannot receive pictures. So
right, yeah,
Teresa,
don't text pictures.
Send it to teresa.watkins@live.com.
There you go. And Mike in Venice, thank you so much for sending the photographs. Enjoy your breakfast this morning. So that's all good. We've had a lot of phone calls today. We caught up from the storms.
Mm-hmm.
I do have, let me see here, large 15 by 15 ligustrum. Try to move it or back in the ground. It's been uprooted. Yes, put it back in the ground. Make sure it's compact. I would stake it and then just keep praying, see what happens. Also, too, Kim in Palm Coast was listening to the Best Of shows that we had over the storm holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And she mentioned the doctor, Gary Bachman. Gary, we missed you coming down.
I know. I am so angry at the storm, especially for that.
Yes. Katie and Gary did not come down. They were supposed to be live on the show. So raised beds, is it best now? Let me answer that next week, Kim. I will get a hold of you, or you can just email me and I'll send you a direct question. And then Bill in Ocala, how to best transplant a philodendron about 4 feet tall. Dig it up. Make sure you had a good root ball. Put it in the ground and water it in well. That's all you need to do. It transplants very easy. Lizzie, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for letting me be a part of this. And thank you to our listeners. We have the best listeners in the whole wide world. So
thank you.
Continue to text. I will get them Monday morning whenever I come in to do the morning show. And I'll take pictures and I send them to Teresa.
Yeah, be patient. We are busy, but we just certainly appreciate having you. We're so glad you are part of our world here. We do appreciate it. So you can go on and get my newsletter on she-consulting.com. Sign up for free. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.